Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Push My Buttons Games podcast. This is Captain Platinum. We've got episode 31 for you guys today. It is me, Captain Platinum, and I'm accompanied by
Lahi La La Ida. We're gonna talk about Lahi, if you know what that is. This is Dungeon Master Mike, and I'm two shots of Jose Cuervo in.
And I'm just one shot of Terramana in, so we've got a fun episode for you guys.
It's just gonna be us two. Luke is in Colorado right now, and Panda Pat, she says she was gonna be able to make it, and then she didn't respond. So we're kind of just chilling, coming to you from Baltimore, and you're in Salt Lake, right? Or are you in like Ogden?
Okay, I'm in Salt Lake.
Coming to you from Baltimore and Salt Lake. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good. When you started that, all that came to mind, because you hadn't done it in that pitch before, and that song that like la ya di ya ya da. That's what I thought you were. And I was like, oh, this is another song that you just sent me.
That's another good song. So I guess what I'm going to do is I'm going to post this particular video in our Facebook page, because we're going to talk about it, and because the news revolves around this video a little bit, but you have to watch it, especially when I post it. The camera pan at 2 minutes and 21 seconds is pure gold.
It is. I love that you give us the timestamps too. That's great.
Timestamp 2 minutes and 21 seconds. So funny story. Before we got together to record, I was hanging out with my brother and two friends in Southern California over Discord. We were playing Final Fantasy 14. We're on the same server. And we just, you know, shoot the shit together. And I was like, yeah, I got to get off at 9 o'clock my time for recording a podcast episode. And they got all interested, because I guess I just never told them I was on a podcast. And so I think they're going to listen. Hey guys, what's up, Jesse, Trevor, and Alex? And nice. I was like, what?
You just
what?
Quintupled our listeners.
All seven of us enjoy this podcast. Oh yeah, and Nathan, that's right, Nathan too. He wasn't necessarily on the Discord, but he's Jesse's brother, and he's over the microphone too while he plays League of Legends. So he may listen in too. But so I asked the group, what video game news should I talk about? And they're like, oh, did you know that the Final Fantasy 14 fan event happened? I believe this was May 14th or May 15th, but for everyone at home, Final Fantasy 14 is a case study for a lot of things in the video game industry, for games that come back from literally being dead on arrival to just good game design and story. If you like this particular genre, which is the JRPG, to just everything about Final Fantasy 14 is just really interesting.
It's MMO JRPG, right?
It's MMO JRPG. Yes. So it initially came out, I think, in 2010, right after Final Fantasy 13, obviously, for it being 14 in the series. But it was thought to be, I guess back then, a lot of people were obsessed that World of Warcraft was the top of the mountain, and everyone wanted a WoW killer. And Final Fantasy 14 was one of those that was considered to be the WoW killer. And it just was dead on arrival. I think everyone knows the story. And if you don't, there are plenty of videos on YouTube that you can go check out and learn about how interesting this game has become since its inception. They rebuilt it from the ground up. And it's really, I think it's an amazing game. That Discord channel that I'm on with my brother and a couple of friends, you know, we have critiques of the game, obviously. But I love the game so much that I'm not afraid to critique it. Because critiques ultimately, you know, when it's done in good faith, the game gets better. So they had this fan event recently, the past week, and it was a fan appreciation event And the composer for the musical score of Final Fantasy XIV, which the music is just like chef's kiss. I listen to some of the songs when I deadlift. That's just how pumped I get for some of the music. And the guy who composes a lot of this music just finished a bout with cancer. 6 to 8 months or something like that. Just something insane. This guy was like his game, just coming out of the grave. And he stands up in front of 50,000 fans. And there is a professional concert pianist that was hired to play some of the music of the game. I don't think she actually worked on the game. I'm not sure. But I guess what's common with video game concerts is professionals are hired to duplicate or to play certain scores. And so she's standing by a grand piano. And you know, she looks magnificent. The guy looks sharp and he's like, "Do you know Lahi?" Which is a theme in one of the areas of the newest content. I'm not there yet. And I don't know what he does, but he doesn't play music. This is Napoleon Dynamite level shit. Like
that's a good way to put it, man. That's a pretty good analogy.
I have this weird friends that I know say, "Oh, you're just super empathetic." I just think I'm a wuss, but I can't watch cringe without dying a little on the inside. Once I get through my initial like watch through, I feel so much better. Zara has more Jose Cuervo. Hold on. Okay. So once I get through my initial watch, I eat it all up. So, in answer to my friend Nathan, yes, I do love cringe, but I can't. It's hard to get through it. So Alex, Jesse, Trevor, and Nathan were like rooting for me to finish the video because once I finished it, I was going to love it all the more. And he murders your ears, to put it lightly. The guy has like two weird trombone-ish weird flutes on his suit. And I'm just going to kind of play like the podcast won't be able to hear it because it just goes directly into my earpiece. But he has like these two like little flutes on his lapel and he's trying to sing Lucky, which again, you have to watch the video on the Facebook page, but it does not. He's off key. And the entire time the pianist is looking like she wants to bite the end of a shotgun. her chin is pressed all the way into her neck. Like she's like watching a horrible accident and she can't do a single thing because 50,000 people are watching her. So she has to endure this torture. And people in the comments of the YouTube video swear that he's literally just shitposting everyone. One of my favorite comments was, dude gets out of the hospital and this is one of the first things he decides to do.
Yep, I read that one.
Another one says, so this guy basically performed a God-tier shitpost live to every single player in the world. Another person says, imagine getting to heaven. And the angels say, we're going to sing praises unto God. And you have to sing this for eternity. Another one is, I don't think this one was funny. I think he's actually like brought to tears, which is weird. As bad as this song is, the fans really appreciated it because the original music for this area, it is an odd song. It's really weird, but it kind of works. And it's one of those songs that can be easily like butchered, in which case it did in front of 50,000 people. And he just, and then at the very end, I don't know if you saw this, Jamie, but at the very, very end, I'm talking like the last it looks like 2 seconds, he runs off stage. Completely Napoleon Dynamites it. I mean, I've used that analogy twice, but it really is Napoleon Dynamite.
Yeah, just, it is. It's a good analogy.
Just books it off stage. And the pianist is just like sitting there. Again, go to 2:21. Look at her face. She's in so much pain.
She's like, Mike, what did you... That was the face I made when I was like, Mike, why are you making me listen to this? What did you send me?
So I will post this on the Facebook page. Really, I'm focusing on like the least important part of the entire Found event, because something that's interesting about Final Fantasy XIV. Do you play, Jamie, any MMOs?
I have never got into those. I usually just don't have time.
Okay, so... Whoa, sorry, just another sip of Jose. Okay, so MMOs would take a lot of time, but the interesting thing about Final Fantasy XIV is they are ending the story. There was another Final Fantasy MMO, Final Fantasy XI, that's still running today, and it's considered to be completed, but people go on to go through the entire story. So people were assuming that Endwalker, which is the newest expansion that will be released later this year, is going to end the story, and that's the end of the game. But what they are saying is this is the end of a particular like story arc. And they've been really unclear about what that means. Some people are speculating that you create one character and you go from the main game all the way to Endwalker, and another character has to go from whatever expansion is after Endwalker to whatever end of expansion that they're doing. So like it's two games. There's a lot of theory, but the creators were very, very adamant that Endwalker was going to be the end of the story for Final Fantasy XIV. But I really don't think they're going to be done pushing out expansions, because this thing has been super lucrative for Square Enix. And so this Endwalker fan event was like a fan appreciation weekend plus information of the expansion. They revealed new classes, the Sage, which is a healer class, and there's another class that wields a scythe in a Dark Knight style, Bloodborne style, I guess, kind of class. And then they kind of showed some of the areas a little bit. This isn't really going to be too much news for what I think is our main listener base, but essentially Final Fantasy XIV has a lot of content coming out this year, and this guy graced our ears with this particular rendition of an area from the current content with, and also tortured the poor pianist, professional piano lady off in the back. She looks like she wants to die.
Yeah. Stuff after, is it Shadowbringers?
Shadowbringers, yes. So I am going really slow through this. I played Final Fantasy XIV. I played it for 5 years now. And I'm only into the first expansion. Because World of Warcraft, I have to compare World of Warcraft because it really shows two different approaches for MMOs. When you play World of Warcraft, you can jump straight into the current content. Current World of Warcraft is you create a brand new character, level one, and they say, hey, what expansion do you want to play to get you up to current level? And you're like, you know what? I want to play Wrath of the Lich King, which, if you know Warcraft lore, that he's a big baddie that was from Warcraft 3. And you're like, okay, cool. You play through Wrath of the Lich King, and you get up to level, I think it's level 70. And then the newest expansion is level 70 to 80. And so you play the current content. So they really have it streamlined from new character creation to current content. But essentially, you can skip all... I think World of Warcraft came out in 2006 or 7. You can skip like 15 years of content just instantly. I don't know if you heard that snap.
Oh, yeah. I heard all of them.
Yes. So you can skip content, right? But Final Fantasy XIV goes about a little bit differently. You have to play from day one content, and you have to play through the content. So you can't jump into current day content until you play all of the original game and all the previous expansions, because it creates a coherent story. Whereas Warcraft, the story is very like liquid. It's very depend, like the story for all of World of Warcraft can be different depending on if you play from day one, to where if you play to the beginning of some random expansion, to where if you play now. And they're two very different approaches. So Final Fantasy 14, the newest expansion is called Shadowbringers, and the next expansion, which will be released later on this year in a few months, is called Endwalker, and that will be the end of the story. But to actually get to Endwalker, you have to play through the main game, Heavensward, Stormblood, Shadowbringer, and then Endwalker. And I think after Endwalker, the next expansion will be like a checkpoint, so you can create a new character and play at that expansion for current content. But it creates a whole new story.
Oh, wow.
So it's a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But that's my news story. That's one of my news stories. I have another news story, but I'll go after you. What has caught your eye this week?
One of the things that was just fun to see, I don't play the game, but yeah, Call of Duty's mid-season update is all about the action movies and the heroes. So in the first trailer for Call of Duty Warzone and Black Ops Cold War, they're getting the 80s movie update, so we can get John McClane and John Rambo. And I just thought that was kind of cool to see that they're bringing the Nakatomi Plaza to the game. So
that is exciting. I don't play Call of Duty, but it is really fun that they're bringing in the 80s content. I always love it when games do that.
Right. Because, I mean, those are some of the badasses from that era that you remember, right?
So I really want an Arnold Schwarzenegger to come in and like someone can play with a Predator skin. And you can like do a macro where like your Arnold Schwarzenegger skin's like, come on, get me, come on.
They really maybe just need to make an Expendables DLC for it or whatever.
I've never seen that movie, Expendables.
Oh yeah, there's three of them, I think. You know, where they were, it's basically the old washed up 80s actors in the 2000s doing an action movie. It's pretty great.
You know, the funny thing about that was, I don't know if it was number one or number two, but they, at the time when one of those movies came out, the Governator was still in office. And by the Governator, I mean Arnold Schwarzenegger, the Terminator.
You mean Arnold?
Arnold. So he was still in office, but he makes a cameo. And I remember being pissed about that because, like, I was a California voter and I actually took my voting rights seriously. But I was like, why would he like take some schedule out of his governing duties and like go be on a movie set? And now here I am in my 30s and I'm like, you do you, Arnold. I, you know what? If Biden did that and got onto a movie set, I'd like applaud him. But that's just me. But at the time I was just like, you know, he didn't have to go and do a cameo. That was really wasteful and irresponsible of him. And now I'm 30s drinking Jose Cuervo.
Anyway, so that was just a cool thing to see, man. Yeah, because who doesn't love 80s action movies, right? So right. I just thought that was cool to see they've added that to a game. Mm-hmm. On the Nintendo front, there was a couple things this week. Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity is getting an expansion pass. So that's available.
I will eventually play that game. Eventually. Yeah.
I've started it. I need to get through. I think I've completed the first two chapters is what the thing says. So chapter one is pretty straightforward. And then chapter two, you have to do, I think, four or five like sub-chapters to beat it, if I remember right, in the menu. So I just need to pick that back up and keep going. So The purchase bonus is available on May 28th. You get Link's costume, prototype, ancient gear, and Link's weapon prototype, ancient short sword. So this is coming in two waves. Wave one is available in June of this year. It's called Pulse of the Ancients. There's an added playable character, added weapon types, which are action styles, new challenges in the Royal Ancient Lab, and newly added challenging enemies. Wave 2, Guardian of the Remembrance, is available in November of this year, and that will have added character vignettes, newly added stages, expanded roster, and new battle skills for existing characters. So this is around $20 in the US, so for both of those. So not a bad price probably, but still, like, some of the comments, you know, they're pretty mean, you know, like, it's still not a great game. And I don't know, people probably don't tend to play these type of games because it's Dynasty Warriors, right? It's Zelda is Dynasty Warriors, which is way different than a Zelda game.
I've only ever played one Dynasty Warriors entry, and that was a demo disc at a Target for the PlayStation 1. And I was a kid, and I remember thinking that it was so revolutionary, and I never played it. I never picked it up. But I'm excited when I eventually get into it. I'm sure I will play that to my heart's content for about 35 and a half hours, and then I'll put it down and never touch it again.
Yeah. I think they're up to Dynasty Warriors 9, if I remember right. I've only played the one really on the Vita. It's the only like straight Dynasty Warriors game I've played. And then I've played the Hyrule Warriors ones. So,
Just 2 second news. The Vita store and the PlayStation 3 store are staying online. I think we may have covered that. We may not have, but that is old news anyway. Yeah. I just wanted to bring that up.
Yeah, there was definitely some pushback on those stories, and they said, oh, like, we didn't realize you people cared so much, basically. And yeah, we found a way to make it work.
I mean, how else am I going to play Tulip? Which, if you guys don't know, on the PlayStation 3 store, there is a PlayStation 2 import called Tulip, where it is Dark Souls combined with a life sim. It's just, this is great. Anyway.
Yeah, so that was the first of the Link news. I mean, Zelda does, The Legend of Zelda does turn 35 this year, or it already did for its Japan launch date. And there really has been nothing happening, but everyone's really hoping that Mario just finished. So they finished the 35th birthday of Mario. So that had roughly a year to do all of its stuff. And now they're hoping that Nintendo's going to focus on Zelda. So the one thing they have announced is Skyward Sword is coming out July 16th, I believe is the date. And it was, gosh, Tuesday night at like 7 o'clock Mountain time. I just happened to click on Instagram, you know, to check something. So I had a notification for something. Literally it was Nintendo was the first thing in my feed. And it was that we're getting the Zelda and is it Loftwing amiibo and to launch with the game. And, so I was like pretty excited, but I think I missed the pre-order window because I think it's online only with every store. Best Buy now says sold out. I found it the next day on GameStop, but I've never gone in and able to see it for purchase. And when I brought it up with one of the local stores here, the manager was like, yeah, I had a friend that said they could see it in their cart, but I think they got it. But the manager said they went in and they saw it, but they couldn't get it to go through. So I might have missed out on the pre-order of this amiibo. So the hard part with this is they've now done that with the Joy-Cons as well. They're doing I think it's the Sword and Shield Joy-Cons for Skyward Sword as well to celebrate this. And you just can't pre-order them. And then you're like, will there be more on launch day or shortly thereafter?
Nintendo has a really odd marketing practice.
Right?
Like, every single thing that they release, it's like, this is a special edition of the Switch. It's Tom Nook and Link in some sort of like Doom Eternal mix with like a specialized amiibo thrown into the package. And we're only going to make 5 of them. You know, it's just a thing where I'm just like, oh, cool. That's a thing I will never own because if you can make more money, just make more of them. I don't understand why they make this amiibo and all the other shit that they do so rare. We talked about it briefly before we started recording, but that amiibo has a controversy behind it. I don't know if you heard about it before we talked about the news stories that we were going to hit up. Do you know about like the controversy with that amiibo?
I don't know if I read any of the controversy.
Okay, here we go. I'm going to tell you a story. So Skyward Sword is arguably, and when I say arguably, I don't mean it's not fact. A lot of people feel like what I'm about to say is true, but it is arguably one of the worst Zeldas ever produced. I'd like to invite a Zelda specialist onto this show to ask them, like, do you believe Skyward Sword was a, you know, was just a piece of hot garbage? just to double check it. But Skyward Sword was not liked by very many people, and it unfortunately was released during the 25th anniversary. Everyone thought that they were going to get like a really cool bad guy, and you know, it was just a mess.
Yeah, I mean, I got it, and I got the special edition or whatever with the gold Wiimote. So this was on the Wii, and then I never finished the game. I got pretty far through it. And the thing was, I was in one of the dungeons, and I think I could never find anywhere to save or something. And then I just got mad, and then I never went back.
So okay.
But I'm just wondering. I'm not going to say what it, but is this the quality of life update that is controversial?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So they have, when I say they, Nintendo, you know, they'll periodically re-release, especially a title like a house name like Zelda. They will re-release old titles with quality of life updates. I mean, unless you're playing Super Mario, unless you're playing Mario 64. Was that called Super Mario 64? I don't know.
There was Super Mario 64 on
there. Super Mario 69. There was no quality of life updates. But most times when you re-release things, there are some critiques that you take in when the game was originally released, and you implement some sort of patch or hotfix into it that just makes your life a little bit easier.
Like Wind Waker, right? Wind Waker did a nice quality of life update.
Yes, they did that with Wind Waker. That's actually the exact example that I read about. Now, I've never played Skyward Sword, so forgive me if my facts are a little bit off. But it sucked. One of the things that people complained about, like you said, there wasn't any like real convenient way to get back to the main hub of the game, which I think is in the air, like the sky.
Yep.
And you could do pretty much everything. Like you can sell like the loads of useless crap that you have. Maybe, I don't know, I never played the game. Or you can save. I'm pretty sure there's a save point up there. So here's the thing. This amiibo, when you get it scanned into the game, you have the ability to teleport automatically to the main hub, which is in the sky. No matter where you are at, no matter what's going on, you can be in the middle of the dungeon, you can be in the middle of a boss, you can teleport directly back to the main hub. And you think that would be really awesome to have in the game. But instead, it is locked behind a $25 price tag.
Yeah, it is.
It's $25. B, there's only like three of them in existence. So scalpers will probably get them if you don't. So people are really pissed. Like, this is exactly what we were complaining about 10 years ago when this game was released. Why is this not normally in the game? Why is this restricted to an amiibo that you are doing a purposely limited production run on, that you are notorious for? Like, we're already past the Super Mario 64, Super Mario Sunshine, and Super Mario Galaxy thing, which was a digital purchase only. And they're like, in the end of March, we're going to not sell it anymore. What? Why? It's digital. Keep it on your storefront.
Yeah, and the digital one, yep. But it is hard copy.
They make this amiibo. First off, it's already bad enough that this quality of life update is behind $25. But it's even worse when it's also in your marketing bullshit. And it's like, we're only going to make 7 of these. Come on.
Yeah.
Sorry, I think I clipped the audio there for a bit. I get really passionate. Yeah. And so, like, Nintendo is really weird. I don't get at all. Like, I have money I want to throw in their face, and they're like, I'm sorry, Mr. Sonora, but your money's not good enough for us to make another amiibo for you. And even then, it's like, come on, dude, you're blocking a quality of life. Yeah.
And the amiibo isn't like bad either. Like, it's got two figures on it. So I'm putting it I sent you guys a picture. I was able actually to get the Magna Mullo Monster Hunter Rise amiibo, which was stupid hard to get too. And that one I think was $25 as well. And that's a big old cat looking thing, you know, dragon. So here for $25, and it looks like it's the same normal packaging, but it does have Zelda and Loftwing on it. So two sculpts on like the normal looking stand and the normal packaging. You can kind of see it because it's about $16.99, I think $15.99, $16.99 for an amiibo now. Yeah, I think it's $15.99 is what the Daruk and all the champions from the last Legend of Zelda game, Breath of the Wild, are going for is about $16 now. So a little bit more to put another figure on there. It's about right. But yeah, when you don't tell anybody pre-orders are coming, you can't pre-order, and the pre-orders drop at god-awful hours, and you just have to get lucky. It's almost like trying to buy a PS5 or Xbox One S or X right now. You're just like, you got to try to set up a bot, it seems, or be able to somehow get a notification that these things are going live. So,
and then you got to be... You got to be willing to stop everything you're doing to purchase it.
Yeah, and like you and me, we have the big boy jobs. They're like, I can kind of take a break most days if I need to at a certain point. But like you and me probably both know at certain days, you can't. You're so busy or you're in a lab or somewhere and
can't do anything. Yeah, I'm in like a classified area dealing with like next generation cutting edge tech. And they're just like, Mike, we need you to start the signal generator for this thing. And I'm just like, wait, I got to buy my Nintendo Amiibo. Hold on one second.
Hold on, Mr. Boss Man. I got that money you're giving me to do this. I need to go buy a little statue figure.
Sorry, your time is not worth. Like, this thing is rare, let me tell you. Come on, like, you gotta cut me some slack. Nintendo is just full of shit. Like, let's just get down to it. I don't understand their marketing practices. I don't understand why they don't just release Mother 3 with an English translation. I don't get why Super Mario has to be behind some weird digital vault that doesn't need to exist. Right. I don't understand them.
So you bring up that Mario anniversary thing. The hard copies are still in the stores. Like, it cracks me up because they were like, you won't be able to buy this after March 31st. And I was in the store just this morning, and it's right there next to Miitopia, which just came out this week, which I forgot was coming out. Someone was like, I'm looking for Miitopia. And I was like, that's out? Like, really?
Oh, man.
I don't even remember what that game is. I know it's a Nintendo-based game for Miis. So, but, yeah, I was like, oh, yeah, that is out.
Yeah. So there's that story.
Yeah, so if you're lucky and got a Loftwing and Zelda amiibo, congrats. And if you're in the hunt, good luck.
Your chances are probably zero at this point because the pre-orders are already like done.
Yeah. So from what I can tell, and I don't even know when they went live. I even, you know a GameStop manager, and I let them know as soon as I knew about it, and they're like, "Whoa, cool!" And then they're like, "It looks like it's online only, and we won't know when they go live. So good luck."
All right.
Well, any other news stories you wanted to touch on?
I do have one, and I have another story that's kind of related to it. You ready for this?
Let's do it.
So, did you play Pokemon cards, trading cards, Pokemon trading card game? I just dropped my phone. Oh, man. Jose, why do you do that?
I never really played that, but I played Yu-Gi-Oh! Because I worked at Toys R Us, and I had to run the Yu-Gi-Oh! Stuff back in the day.
There is something about the millennial generation. When I said the millennial generation, I don't mean like Gen Z, which for some reason the news cycle always gets Gen Z mixed up and they like to call them millennials. It's not the case. Millennials being now, like, we're full grown adults and we like the hobbies that we like. So we put money towards our hobbies, right?
Yep.
And one of the things that the coronavirus brought the absolute worst out of all of us. I'm just going to throw that out there. So if you are just a piece of shit, that's okay. I still love you. The coronavirus did that to us. And so millennials, I think everyone, not just millennials, not just our generation, but everyone in general is just a sucker for nostalgia. We are going to go into 90s nostalgia and 2000s nostalgia pretty soon. Watch, mark my words. But one of the things that we have a hankering for nostalgia for are the Pokemon trading card games. Because they did like a re-release of the first editions and stuff. They've done some really pretty special things. The Pokemon trading card game has upped itself in popularity, rivaled only by Magic the Gathering. In fact, let me tell you this before I get into the news story. There's this card that was released in one. I don't know when it was. I think it was a couple of years ago. But like the big card for Pokemon is like the Charizard, right? The holographic Charizard. But that was the first set of Pokemon cards. There have been several subsequent sets since then, and one of the more famous ones of one of the subsequent sets. And this is not the name that I posted on it. They call it the fat gay Pikachu card, and they call it that because it's a rainbow holographic. It literally has like, and it was totally unintentional, but you can look at the holographic and like every color is on this card, and they call it the fat Pikachu too, because it's the one of the old designs, which I think became relevant when Sword and Shield came out, because when Pikachu did his Gigantamax transformation, he turned into his original design, which is a fat rat. He just turns into like this poly, like this roly-poly thing. So this card is called Fat Gay Pikachu, and it's called that lovingly. That's the name. And so there is this like streamer during, I think it was during the coronavirus, or maybe right before the coronavirus, but he got a $50 tip to essentially take a pack of Pokemon cards and like crease it. Just fold it so hard so that a permanent crease is in all the cards in the pack.
Oh, jeez.
All right. And this guy, like, he gets the $50 tip. He's like, okay. So he bends the pack, and then he straightens it out, bends it again, straightens it out. And he opens up the pack, and he shuffles it up. And, like, every single card has got the crease. And he says, like, in his stream, wouldn't it really suck if I got like fat gay Pikachu. And so he gets to the last card, and it's that card, and he falls on the floor and he dies, and he's just like, why would you pay me to do this? And he cries. You can look it up, and you can find it on Reddit. It's like, if you type in fat gay Pikachu, it's like literally the first result. It's a Reddit result.
Oh, wow.
And it's on a subreddit. I'm giving you very explicit directions how to find this video. It's on the subreddit called Watch People Die Inside. And this dude really looks like he died and was like on the way to being buried.
Oh, jeez.
Because he looked like part of, like, he didn't want to exist anymore. But this is a card that, on its own, straight out of the pack, even perfect, is like $200. So he's already lost $150 by accepting a $50 tip. But when you get this card rated in a professional rating company where they like they examine everything about it and they give it on a scale between 1 and 10,
yep,
it can raise the value of that card to $800 to $1,000. So this dude had a potential 95% loss by taking a $50 tip and folding the pack.
Jeez.
About that, going into the story, those companies that rate comic books and rate pop culture paraphernalia, they are no longer taking Pokemon card orders. They are backlogged by, I think, about like 9 months. Because many people have wanted to revive their love for the Pokemon trading card game. Because coronavirus has made us all insane. And Pokemon cards are like social media. they are a plague that everyone is involved in some degree or another. Anyway.
You had me curious. Oh, just I have literally right here at my recording desk some of my Pokemon cards from back in the day. I have my surfing Pikachu. So I don't know if these are worth anything. And then I've got it's blank names Pikachu, so you write in your name on the card if you really wanted to. And this it's birthday surprise is a special ability, and I've got a flying Pikachu. I doubt they're probably not worth anything. It's just funny to see these here. I don't remember why I have these. I don't remember if it's because I worked at Toys R Us and you know they gave us a few packs or something back then or what, but yeah, it's just funny to see some of these and be like, oh, these are probably not worth anything. And then you just never know.
No. When a sickness that has claimed the lives of millions of people across the globe comes into play, suddenly that Pokemon card is worth a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah, and I've got a cool Porygon here still in its plastic wrapper bag, and it's kind of got a holofoil on it. I don't remember. This might have been a handout for one of the events or something. But yeah, it's got the dates of 95, 96, and 98 on it. So those are just cool. But yeah, I don't know. It's just kind of fun. I randomly pulled these out the other day. I was like, oh, I have a few here, I think. Never big into the actual card game of it.
Yeah, I never really got into it. The only, as far as I did was the Pokemon, not Pokemon, the Game Boy Color had a Pokemon trading card game. That was released for it. And that is the furthest I got into it, was playing the Pokemon card game in this Game Boy Color game.
Mm-hmm.
Michelle, my wife, she played it pretty frequently. There is a con goer, Rachel, she's pretty well known in the Utah area. If you've been to any of the cons like FanX or anything, you've probably seen Rachel. If you don't know her name, but she is tournament level competitor. These trading cards, they've come a long way. But the story that I wanted to get into that I just kind of went on just a tequila fueled rage about was that scalpers have started to viciously threaten Target employees for their stock of Pokemon cards, and not just scalpers. This goes this is the fans and everything too. But some stores are it is a literal risk for us to carry Pokemon cards. And yeah, there is a video that's currently making the waves on Twitter where I guess I'm not sure if there's, you can't tell the difference between a scalper and someone who's a legitimate fan, but Walmart opens up. And these people run into Walmart and they're all overweight men and they jump into the first rack that have the Pokemon cards. And this guy is filming. He's like, I'm not getting into that. I'm not. And they look like vicious dogs fighting over a piece of meat. It's because of the cards. And you're thinking I can get hurt if I go in there and I try to just pick up a pack for little Timmy, my son, who's sick with cancer in the hospital. You can't do it because these guys, they're looking violent and it's so Pokemon cards are in a shortage. It's completely hit the industry. And when I say the industry, I'm not saying just the printers who make the cards. It's hitting Target. It's hitting Walmart. It's hitting the people who do the comic book ratings. There's now a 6 to 8 month waiting period. eBay is just blowing up with Pokemon cards. It's literally reborn.
And it's all trading cards because even we talked about it on the last episode where Target is limiting to if they get them in the MLB. I think they said they're stopped doing Pokemon cards. I can't remember if sports cards are part of that as well.
They're considering sport. This is really odd. Okay. When they have said, Target said, we are not carrying Pokemon cards, but we're considering a major league sport. Like, that to me is just funny. Because you realize, like, I mean, I love baseball, but I don't collect the cards. I could care less about the cards. But baseball cards have been a part of our Americana culture since the 40s. And when they're like, we're thinking about baseball cards, but definitely not Pokemon cards. It, to me, that's just funny.
Again, it was weird. I was there and the lady was talking Pokemon there at my Target like 3 weeks ago on a Monday. And the line was actually for the sports cards and not Pokemon. But she's like, Pokemon will be gone soon. These guys are going to clean me out of the baseball, softball, or baseballs. What are they? Baseball, basketball, and hockey, I think, are the sports that they were putting cards out for.
That's the opposite of what I've heard and read everywhere else. But good for them.
And there was just a line. And I was like, there's a line. Are they all trying to? She's like, no. And people have said, I guess on Twitch, they're opening the packs. And like you said, people are giving them monies for opening them and doing weird things and all this. I don't know. So either, Mike, you can open cards or you can do a hot tub stream. I mean, whatever goes better for you on Twitch.
I don't mean to make some people hot, but I will do a hot tub stream with Pokemon cards. And I will do whatever you want. Just give me money. That's all the news that I've got, man.
Who would have thought that Twitch would be used for hot tub streams and opening?
Oh yeah, let's talk about that for just a quick second. I don't understand the controversy behind that. So there was this one woman streamer, and it because the video game industry is so filled with tons of people that are misogynistic. She was playing games, or she was doing something, or she was playing a board game or playing cards or whatever she was doing. She was streaming on Twitch in a hot tub, right? One of the most, not necessarily the streaming on Twitch part, but being in a hot tub or being in a bathing suit is one of the most summer things you can do.
Yep.
Okay. There is nothing weird about it. But for some reason, when she streamed herself on Twitch, people got all up in arms and they were just like, I'm gonna slam my cup on the table. I'm going to put my microphone close to it. But people got all up in arms and they're just like, how dare she? And it's just like, I don't understand what like the big thing. Like, she's trying to get that hustle. Let her get that hustle. But it was such a big backlash that Twitch made a new category called hot tub streaming, because they're like, we don't want to stop her from streaming in a hot tub, but people are getting mad enough about it. So we're going to make a new category. I have lost all of the facts to the story.
And then it's not just her then, if there's a whole category though, if there's more and more people doing streams in hot tubs.
I mean, like, if you want to do that because you don't want to put yourself on OnlyFans, because I hear OnlyFans can get brutal between the people that are actually making content on there.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, geez, if you can get that title that says like top X percent of OnlyFans creators, like that's a huge deal. And there are people I know that are just cutthroat when they can get like top 5%, top 1%, top 0.5% of OnlyFans content creators. But when you don't want to make OnlyFans content, right? You decide, I'm just going to go on Twitch and I'm just going to wear a bathing suit and I'm just going to play games.
Or whatever you do in a hot tub stream.
Good for you. Like, I don't. If you don't want to do that type of thing, then don't do it. If you don't want to watch that type of thing, then don't watch it. If she wants to make it, cool. And it doesn't have to be just a her. It could be like, Noelle from the Chelsea and Noelle Go to Hell podcast. She used a phrase that I really liked, but it was something like, the gays and the theys and the theys. You know, like, if you guys want to go and do a hot tub stream just for your own self-confidence, just do it. And people that watch it, let them just, like, have fun and chill with you. Why do you have to go all up in arms about it? But Twitch decided to make a whole other category. You know? Mm-hmm. Maybe we should do, like, a contest, like a poll on our Facebook or Twitter page and be like, who would you like to do a hot stream, like a hot tub stream? Would you want Jamie, Luke, Mike, or Pat, or whatever? Like, just...
They don't want Luke, and he'd have to be in a Sonic bathing suit. And he'd have to do it with the uncanny Ryab.
Oh, man. I love it. Okay, so we're going to do an extra news story.
There you go. What have you been playing, man? What's in your currently playing queue?
Okay, so... Other than
Final Fantasy 14.
So yeah, Final Fantasy 14. I'm playing Mahjong on Final Fantasy 14, which in the North America servers is dead. No one plays Mahjong in North America. So I'm trying to figure out a way, like, there's got to be a way for me to, like, become the top, at least in the top 100 players, because no one plays it. And for me to rake in all the rewards, there's got to be a way. So I'm trying to figure that out for Final Fantasy 14.
Is that Mahjong, like, in Yakuza?
Yes. Yes. So that it's the same game. In fact, I learned how to play it in Yakuza, and I thought it was really neat. Because A, you know, like, it's a different culture than my own, so that's cool. And then it's pretty much poker, but with 14 cards. And I love poker, and so I was like, you know what, this Mahjong thing, like the different hands and everything, that could be pretty fun to get into. And I really enjoyed it on Yakuza. So Final Fantasy 14 actually has a Mahjong league on it. And you would rightly assume that for the Asian servers, those Mahjong tournaments can get pretty crazy. But in the North America servers, they're just empty. And so I'm just trying to figure out a way, like, maybe I can get, first off, if I just want to kill time and play a game of Mahjong and learn more about it, I just go on Final Fantasy 14 and play it. If anything, with computers. But I'm trying to figure out a way how to reap all the benefits I can by playing it on Final Fantasy 14 with no one else being serious about it. So I'm trying to figure that out. I think I talked about this on the last episode, so I don't want to spend too much time. But there is a series called Legend of Heroes, which is the most generic name for a series. But there, I have a friend, Jesse, the same friend that I talked about from my Discord group earlier that I was playing Final Fantasy 14 with. He gifted me Legend of Heroes Trials of the Sky like 6 months ago or 8 months ago. Jesse and I are really, really close friends. We knew each other very, very well when I was in California. But I moved out of California in 2012. And I rarely, you know, I go back to California probably once a year, twice a year, and I see him. I make it an effort to hang out with him. So him and I are just good friends, and we will always be good friends. And so just like 6 or 8 months ago, he gifted me Legend of Heroes Trials of the Sky. He's like, hey, this is one of my favorite series. I'd like you to try it. And I was like, I will, but I've got a mile long list of games I'm trying to play. And so he would check in with me like every month or so. And I was like, you know what? I got to try it because he swears by it. And yeah, it's a fun JRPG. It was made in 2006. And I was like, there's got to be more to this, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's very rare for a game that's almost coming up on 20 years old, you know, 15 years old, for it to be as revered as it is. Like, what about it is it? Because I got about 15 hours in, and I'm like, okay, there's generic world building. There is an empire that probably people don't like. You got your major cities, and there seems to be only four of them. The game, like every other JRPG, starts you off walking on a mountain path to your journey. You know, it followed all the tropes, and so I looked it up. This series is like 8 games long, in each game is like 50 hours, 50 to 60 hours.
Wow.
And the series is what people like, not necessarily a particular entry. I'm like, come on, so the series is divided into like two, really like three, but like two main, I guess, like storylines. There's Trials of the Sky, and that's three games long, and Jesse gifted me Trials of the Sky 1. And then there's Cold Steel, which is five games long. And in between Trials of the Sky and Cold Steel, there are two games. And so those are their own little thing. But they still take part in the same world. So Trials of the Sky 1, 2, 3, the two middle games, and then Cold Steel 1 through 5 all take place in the same world. And there are crossover characters. It's like the Avengers, right? With like Iron Man being released in 2008. And then like you have Avengers Endgame, and like the stuff from Iron Man still affects the content that Disney's putting out now. So it's the series that people are talking about is like this amazing series. But I'm like, so I'm like 20 hours into Trials of the Sky 1, and you're saying I got to put in 600 more hours of gameplay to like,
jeez,
understand what's going on. So I'm giving it a shot. And Trials of the Sky 1 really is a lot of fun. There are some unique mechanics, even for a game back in 2006. It doesn't seem archaic. So it is fun. It took a while for the story to pick up, which is a trope that can become good. So I'm really giving it an honest shot, but I do see myself at least playing this first story arc, Trials of the Sky 1, 2, and 3. So I'm playing that. The other game that I've put in a lot of time recently was Resident Evil Village, which came out like 2 weeks ago. I don't think we've talked about it.
Yeah, we haven't.
We haven't. But there... people like Vampire Lady.
Bay. That's what Luke calls her. Bay.
Bay. Yeah, we talked about that a little bit. I talked about the fly swatter mod where people can like spank her ass.
Yeah. Were you the one that also sent the mod of her hat getting bigger and bigger and bigger?
Yes, that was me.
Okay.
did you watch that?
I did.
Did you like it?
It made me chuckle.
There is a mod that makes her hat get bigger each time you look at it. Resident Evil Village, I played it on hardcore mode. Yeah, now the alcohol is starting to part the veil a little bit. I do remember the last episode that we talked about this. I did get into the middle of Valley of Shadows. I don't know if I'm going to finish my next playthrough, but I did put a lot of time into that. Another Discord community that I'm in, which I'm going to try and get this person onto our podcast eventually. I don't know how successful it will be, but I'm in another Discord community with a YouTube creator, and they're currently doing like a book club of the month type thing. And Resident Evil Village is the game that they're talking about right now. Everyone's loving it. So I completed that. I'm also playing Fire Emblem Three Houses, which was released, I think, in 2018 or maybe even 2019.
It's one of the two. I think it might be 19.
Yeah, it's the newest Fire Emblem game. I have liked Fire Emblem since its soft, unintentional reboot in Fire Emblem Awakening. I played all the entries like up to now, except for the Dynasty Warriors version that they made for it. I didn't play that one. But Fire Emblem is a great game. It's worth... I'm going to, at one point, get an emulator to play all the older Fire Emblem games. But this one is really interesting. The plot goes that you are a mercenary who gets hired by a church to become a professor in their church-led school. Like, very much like Duke or Yale. Like, a lot of our big East Coast schools are religious schools. And so you are in a religious military academy, and you get hired as a professor because your father was a knight of the church who was really, really legendary. And they gave him the job offer, and he's like, nah, but you know what? my son or daughter, whoever you play as, would be really good in that position. So on his recommendation, you get the job. And so you get to be a professor, and you choose one of three houses or one of three groups of students to teach. And it completely changes the course of the game depending on who you pick. And one run through of this game right now, like it's like I'm on 40 hours. So I'm like, if I were to replay this game, playing all the other houses, it would take me a minimum of 120 hours.
Yep.
To get through all the content for this game. So the you choose a house and you are that house's professor for the first half of the game. And the second half of the game, a war breaks out between the three houses. So in the three houses, there is an empire. There's a house that is an empire. They have several civilizations and communities and things within it. Then you have a kingdom of the north, who is separate from the empire. And then you have an alliance of merchant traders. And so those three groups of people have heirs to the rulership of those territories. And so those heirs are in the academy, like this officer's academy. And you have nobles and commoners and people that are in the academy as well. So the second half of the game, a war breaks out between those three houses. And that drastically changes the game depending on who you were the professor for. And so I'm sitting there and I'm on my first playthrough, and the game is compelling enough for me to want to see how it changes at least for one more playthrough. And they include a new game plus feature, which I think will save me time.
That would be nice.
Yeah. So like the reason why the first playthrough is going to be 40 to 50 hours is because, you know, you start off at level one, you got to do a bunch of things. You have to level up your professor teaching skill. But when you do a new game plus, depending on what information is brought into the new game, this second playthrough can be incredibly quick. Because, you know, you won't need to train, or maybe you will, but you don't need to do so at such a great degree. Because you have a greater professor level on your new game plus, you know, you can teach your students more frequently, and thus they grow stronger faster. There's all these little mechanics that I'm noticing between the classroom segments to the war room segments to tutoring specific characters to building your relationships with them that I'm like, you know what? A new game plus really would make this significantly faster if they include these things. So I'm interested to see what a new game plus brings in.
Maybe they'll put out an amiibo to help you out with that.
Behind a $25 wall, and there's only like 10 of them.
I know there are a few Fire Emblem amiibos. I have a few of them.
There's a section in the game, and it's called, like, literally you walk up to it in the game and the name of it pops up in an information bubble on your screen. And it's like, this is the Amiibo Gazebo. And it's a gazebo. It's the gazebo where your main character has tea parties with characters. And
a spot of tea.
When you do, like, I think when you put in the amiibo, you either, like, you get items or whatever it is. And if you specifically use Fire Emblem amiibos, your items are more powerful than you get from the Amiibo Gazebo.
Nice.
So, yeah, there's maybe Nintendo can give me an amiibo that will allow me to, like, cut the runtime down to 10 hours. Because I really want to see. Again, I don't want to spoil too much of it, but there is a definite villain, and you can go down a villain path. And I really want to see that playthrough, but if that playthrough is going to take me 50 hours, I don't like being the bad guy in video games. I don't know how you feel. It makes me feel uncomfortable. I like to be the good guy or play the good guy or play the hero. So I will only go down the evil path if it really expands the lore of the game and I can do it quick, right? So
that makes sense. Yeah.
If Nintendo can like make an amiibo where it's like, you don't need to do anything. If you just want to experience the story, here it is, which is what YouTube is for. But if Nintendo releases it, yeah, I'm down for it. yeah, I would use it. But So I'm playing Fire Emblem, Legend of Heroes, Trials of the Sky, and I was playing Village, but I think I may be done with that for now. I may play some more of it. But yeah, what about you? What are you up to?
Normal Galaxy of Heroes stuff. We had Conquest kickoff yesterday, and now we can go through that. It's a cool game mode. I don't know if I talked about it on here. So they give multiple zones now. It's active for 2 weeks. It has its own energy. And the idea is you can basically use your whole roster most of the time. So there's an easy mode, or is it normal? Normal or hard, I think, is what you get to choose. Yeah, there is no easy. So what you do is they have five sectors. I'm just looking at it right now in my game. So I'm in sector one because I just started yesterday. I'm at the end. So Padme is the main boss at the end of this one. So it's her squad. They changed them up this round. So then it's looks like General Anakin Skywalker next, then Commander Luke Skywalker, Galactic Legend Rey, and Galactic Legend Supreme Leader Kylo Ren for Sector 5. So you go into these battles, and so you enter the sector. There's feats to do for the overall event, and then in each sector there's some feats you need to do to get these key cards. And so every so many key cards you get rewards. So in this sector, I need to do at least 200 critical shots. I'm at 167 out of 200 in all the battles I've done. Win 20 battles without losing any units, and I'm at 10 out of 20. And gain advantage 40 times, and I'm at 34 out of 40 so far. So you click on these, but what they did different is there's modifiers. So for the battle. So if you usually see a Padme team, they have an ability where they reflect all the damage back on you. So I try to avoid those ones. Yeah, so it's called Steadfast Retribution. Whenever a Galactic Republic ally takes damage from an enemy, they reflect 100% of that damage back at that enemy. The damage of this ability is increased by 10% for each time this ally has dealt damage this way. So I try to avoid that one because that's no fun. Because you damage it and you get hit right back. So here's a Jango team. So there's this Thrill of the Hunt. So all bounty hunters gain 9 stacks of true defense at the start of battle. Whenever a bounty hunter gains their payout, they also gain frenzy for one turn, 100% increased damage, and their cooldowns are reset. So obviously you don't want them to gain their payout. True defense, 10% reduced damage taken per stack. So you kind of make your path across, and then the fun part with this, though, is you get to stockpiles for data discs. Data discs are items you can put on your characters to make them crazy. So for this one, I picked Insatiable. All my units gain 11% health steal and 11% defense penetration is the one I chose on that one. And this one was Power I chose. And its allied units gain 27% offense and 22% critical damage. So on the last one we had, there was this deployable cooldown thing that everybody wanted. It was the deployable cooldown disc is what I think it was called. Basically, you had such a certain chance that all of your cooldowns were reset when you used it, and you could stack them. So there's pretty much a 1 out of 2 chance you could have all of your abilities cooldowns reset, so you could just sit there with a character and spam their most powerful attack and just beat it. So you just had to get lucky to grab one or two of those. So it's a kind of a really neat mode. I like it because you can then, you know, with different discs and the different abilities that these guys have in this mode, the teams you're facing, you can use a little bit more of your roster than just the top tier stuff. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
The other thing they put in is every time you use a character, it takes away their, what do they call it, stamina? Yeah, they added stamina to your character. So the first time you use, say, your Padme, and if you win the battle, they'll take off, it's like 9 or 10% of the stamina. So the next time you take her in, she's not as strong. And that way you're not using all the same team to beat everything.
Right, okay.
And then there's little Jawas that you can stop by, and then you can buy stamina stuff as well to put stamina back if you need to. So it's a new cool little thing they've added. So the last two they did, that was how you got the Razor Crest shards, and now they're switching it over to Commander Ahsoka Tano, a new character they added to the game. So it's the only way to get her right now is those shards, I believe. So I'm at 0 out of 330, and she looks pretty sweet. So she has like an insta-kill move. They just released her kit this last week. It's still a fun little game that I love playing. You know, the grind is real. I'm working towards my second Galactic Legend. And then they gave us the next set of requirements for, what are they calling him? Is it Jedi Master Kenobi? Yeah, Jedi Master Kenobi. So for him, we need Grievous. I believe he's R7. Wat Tamborda, R7. And then Qui-Gon Jinn, I think, was R3. Magna Guard is R5. And I think Clone Sergeant, one of the first tunes they used to give you in the game, is, I think, he's R3 or R5. So, again, not atrocious requirements like Rose Tico was one of them they gave us for Rey, which has, like, no use in the game. So, still, yeah, so still playing the game, hoping they've got a couple more surprises coming for us this year to keep us playing. So, but the Conquest mode has been pretty neat to see and have added in. And something that's allowing you to use a more expanded roster. And it's really fun when you can get some of those OP things, you know, the OP discs to make your tunes just ridiculous.
Yeah.
On console, played just a little bit more of Let's Go Eevee. I'm still in the Rock Tunnel. And I have nothing that's really good against rocks other than like my Eevee. I use Swift a lot. I was almost like, I need to use a rope and go back to town to get some heal items.
Yeah, that can be brutal.
Yeah, because so far the game has been super easy. And then when you get to Rock Tunnel, I feel it's the first like real test of... So what's good against rock? Water? Is it water? Would it be good
water,
against...
Water, grass. That point in the game that you may have had access to was water and grass.
Which I don't have, really. So I have my Charmeleon walking with me. He's level 32, I think. So, or 29, I think Eevee's 32 and he's like 29 or 30. So trying to get my Charizard. other than that, I started RE7 last night. I did a stream on that on Twitch with our channel. I'm a little over an hour in because I look over everything. It's been cool. You can definitely, I think for the time, the graphics were amazing, but now with PS5, you can look at it. They're still good. But it's not
Mia's face was always odd to me. Whatever they did when they animated her face, or maybe it was the motion capture, she always looked very uncanny valley for me.
The close-ups are a little, like the first video, I think it looked a little rough. And then I thought it looked a little bit better in a few of the other spots.
I'm never one like that's a stickler for graphics. But I remember looking at Mia and being like, is this the horror of the game? Because it really does look like Uncanny Valley to me. Like she didn't, it made me feel like unsettled because it wasn't animated correctly. I don't think very many people, I haven't seen very much commentary about that. Her animation is much, it's like a lot more improved in Resident Evil Village when you eventually get to that, which is that's the reason why you're playing 7, right? Is because 7 is a direct lead into Village.
Right. So she's in, she's an 8.
She's an 8.
Thanks, man. So
no, that's actually something that that's not a spoiler.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen anything on 8 really. So,
when they released the trailer, and that was like a year before the game came out, you knew Mia was in the game.
Okay. I didn't know by names. I'm probably just getting caught up on it. So
yeah, it doesn't, I mean, like whatever, just get through 7.
Yeah, fine. I'm working on it. I've heard it's somewhat short, like 10 hours or so.
Seven can be short. Yeah.
Yeah. 'Cause 6 was the last one I played, which 5 and 6 are more action genre, like 80, like action movie-ish.
Yeah, I'll be interested to know what your opinion is when you start playing 8, because 8 takes a very different approach than 7.
Okay. But yeah, so far it's kind of creepy. Like, I was just like, this, like, why do you go here alone? Like, why would you not bring people with you?
Yeah, I know. Like, if I was looking for my wife and I had to go drive to Louisiana, I'd be like, hey, Luke, what are you doing over the weekend? Do you have some of that gun training from being in the Navy? Do you want to come with?
And I'm not very far. I've just met, you know, the Bakers. I thought it was interesting with the tape. I'm trying not to give spoilers for anybody who hasn't played the game that's, you know, I don't know, 4 years old. I thought that was kind of a cool way to do it, to have you watch a tape to kind of see how to move forward in the game. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, interesting way to do it. You know, something new and creative, I feel. I don't know. Can't think of another game that's done that. You may have played something that comes to mind, but I can't think of anything. But yeah, for like the longest time, I'm like, I need a weapon. I don't like I want, I'm so used to RE5 and 6 where you have a knife at the very beginning to do stuff. And here you have nothing. So, from what I can see, the house is massive. So I'm curious, like, what these guys do and how do they own such a massive house? And
yeah, it brings back Resident Evil 1 vibes.
Yeah. Yeah. The mansion, which is how I feel this is. And so we'll see how it goes, but yeah, it's a big old house with a guest house. I think those are the two places I've been. So played about an hour last night, a little bit over. So I think I died twice versus Mia the first time. So, yeah, but yeah, we'll see how it goes. But that's really all I've, it's been a busy week doing other things, but that's what I've started doing. I picked up Mass Effect, but I haven't even started that or installed it.
Yeah, I never finished Cyberpunk. I think I've expressed my disappointment in the game. It was fun for like the first half of it. I don't find myself finishing it until after they complete the game or like take out some of the bugs or expand a little bit. But yeah.
Have you heard anything on that? The news on that's kind of died out, it feels like, since...
It has died out. They have been... The last that I read about it was that they have a roadmap, which no one believes, and that because of the hacking incident that happened a couple months ago, they haven't been able to really keep up with the schedule. And they're focusing mainly on fixing the last gen stuff, which I think is a losing battle. And so that's the most that I have heard about it. I don't know. There's supposed to be like a couple of free DLC packs that's coming in. There was one hot fix where, because I like to be the good guy, I never really had the cops chase me. And so there was this one hot fix where they wanted you, not they wanted you, but like whenever the cops could spawn, apparently they would spawn like literally right behind you all the time. And they're like, no, they're going to spawn a little bit of a distance away this time. But instead what they would do is they would spawn like vertically a little bit of distance. So they just like drop into the field. So like between that, I don't know. I feel like this game's going to take another year before it actually becomes viable for me to play and actually give it a serious shot, which is sad because I really, really enjoyed Cyberpunk for like 35 hours before I was like, you know what? I don't need to finish this game. So, anyway, that's kind of a touch up. I haven't heard anything new.
Okay. I think Biomutant came out over the yesterday, so that might, I don't know much about it, but I think I had a friend or two looking at playing that game. But other than that, I haven't been playing much. Yeah, still keeping up on the Star Wars Galaxy Heroes, and now playing some RE7, and then I do need to get back and finish Yakuza 0, Ni No Kuni, and Assassin's Creed Valhalla. I've got a backlog a mile long.
I think everyone's got a backlog, man. Even that's kind of weird because we have been
in quarantine for
quarantine, right? So yeah, I know I've got a backlog. I'm trying to get. I play just long ass games.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much what it is. I play long ass games. I don't ever like try to do something shorter. The most recent like trek through was Resident Evil. But even I'm like considering replaying Yakuza Like a Dragon, but doing the English voice acting this time around. I don't know. I never play short games, so.
Yeah, there are times I'm thankful for short games, but I also don't want to pay $60 usually for a really short game. Yeah. But there's times it's just as you become an adult, because there's, you know, the weekend, I got to mow the lawn, I got to edge, I got to clean this out, I got to get that going, do this, do that, go grocery shopping, you know, all the fun stuff of adulting.
Yeah.
Where you can't just game all the time.
Life takes up your time.
Yeah. All right, man. You got any last thoughts before we close it out?
I think you should follow your heart and play the games that will make you happy. And do not be afraid of those, you know, games you need to put down because, you know, you ain't feeling it. That's my final thought. Play the games that make you happy.
All right. Or the ones that scare the bejeebus out of you, like RE7.
Oh, yeah.
There's a couple times I think there's definitely at least one good one they got me on yesterday, a good jump scare. I was like, whoa, was not expecting that.
I love it. I love that.
It's good. I don't play a lot of the horror games because I don't really consider 5 and 6 to be that bad for horror. I mean, when...
No, it's B-movie slock.
Yeah, when you get Chris Redfield punching a boulder and sending it flying, I mean, come on, man. He's got the massive pythons, so maybe he could do it.
Yeah, Chris makes a return in a later part of the series, and nice. It's great.
Nice. I'm looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys. I guess that wraps up our show. So we will catch you next time. And remember to game harder.
Harder.
All right, guys. We'll catch you next time.
All right. Catch you next time, everyone. Bye. Bye.
Hey there, my name is Tyler.
I'm Mary.
I'm Aaron.
And I'm Kylie.
And we'd like to invite you to join us in the Fortress of Comictude podcast, where we discuss such topics as...
Creator Focus, where we pull a comic creator's name out of a bucket and talk about their history and books they've worked on.
We also do what's called the Comic Book Club, where we pick a book, we page by page, and analyze how cool it is.
And Was It Really That Bad, where we take an old comic book movie from the past that got horrible reviews and decide if it was truly, really that bad.
Plus creator interviews, movie reviews, top 5 lists, and so much more. So join us in the Fortress of Comictude.
This show is part of the Geek Nerd Network.
Geek Nerd Network.
Find more shows like it at geeknerdnetwork.com.
This is Jen.